You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And just before we started, I played the music of the great Elvis Presley, I Need Your Love Tonight. And I just wanted to remind you I'll be here on Sunday night between 6 and 8 with a rock and roll hit parade. Plenty of 60 songs to come up that night, let me tell you, 2 hours of great fun. So anyway, being the second Wednesday of the month between 1 and 2, it's time for our legal hour. With our people from Hutchison Legal, we have the great man himself, Grant Hutchison, and we've also got Monica to talk to us today. We haven't spoken to Monica before, so welcome to the two of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. It's a pleasure to be with you. Well, it's a pleasure to be with you virtually.
Well, people don't know where you are, so you could be up in sunny service paradise for all we know, and maybe that's why you're not in the studio.
We do have the looks for radio.
Well, that's what I say about myself. Now, Grant, last time we sent you away, we had, I think it was Duffy rang, about the wills as to how he can find. He doesn't know whether somebody's left the will, whether it be a family member, and he wants to know, is there anywhere he can go to try and find out?
Yeah, look, it's a great question, and can I say this is an area...
Hey, hang on. When someone says it's a great question, that always gets me a bit worried, mate.
Well, let's just say it's a problem. It raises an issue that hasn't been addressed for hundreds of years.
Right.
But back in the time when people were going off to World War I and World War II, they made it clear that they set up what's called a registry, where if you're on your way to the ship and you did a will, you could pop it into the registry, and before anyone applied for probate, you had to go and do a search of this registry of people that had registered their wills.
Right.
Most people don't, and in fact, I think it's almost gone as a system. But logically, it would be great if everyone registered their wills. The fact is, it's a very personal thing, a will document. Yep. People don't want to think that some bureaucrat could look at it, and the fact that you've got to update it. Most lawyers want to protect their own little patch and not have a government having a central registry, because having the will normally leads to work later in terms of the probate and the administration work, which can be worth about $6,000. So, you know, $3,000 for the probate, $3,000 for the administration. So, and that's just that ignores the other costs. But so it would be great if there was a system in place. As a young article clerk, I remember going off to search the registry, but I don't believe people do it these days. So no, Monica tells me
she says no.
No, she says
it's no good. Monica nodding her head because the audience can't hear her.
I think Monica was using a line out of Little Britain. She was saying, "Computer says no."
Well, I mean, the problem with all this, and of course, if somebody knows their relative has used Hutchison Legal or Fred Nurk or Joe Blow, then you'd just go straight to that legal organisation and say, look, have you got the will? But in some cases, people are interstate, they're not necessarily communicating, and not everybody wants to talk about a will because it sounds like, when you push off, I want to see if I've got some money. So, I mean, if you don't know who the solicitor is and it's not in the house, how do you know?
Well, there was a famous artistic person or part of the arts movement, and he actually, it was found that his will was taped, you know how you pull out a drawer?
Yep.
Underneath the drawer, there's a little gap between. He'd taped his will underneath the drawer and was found later. So that was the last will. But he obviously didn't trust anybody. He didn't want to leave it with his lawyer. And I think, who was a great literary, an English literary giant who decided to write his own will to keep the lawyers out and keep the costs down? And it turned into the biggest legal bunch.
And that can happen. Grant, very funny story. Pardon me. I interviewed an undertaker a number of years ago over another matter, and he said, well, not everybody goes running to the will the soon as they find out Uncle Harry or this person's died. And this was a son. He was interstate. He had a bit to do with his father, but he didn't. And when they read about the will about 4 days later, they found out that he had to be buried, and he wanted a Catholic church because he'd never told his son, but he'd converted a Catholic to be a Catholic, whereas they cremated him through his ashes.
I think the last pope was the one before, certainly not the current. He hasn't made many proclamations yet, but there was something about we don't like cremation, but if you do cremate, don't scatter and certainly don't put parts of you in some jewellery and parts in another, or send it up in a rocket to the stars. But look, I'm staying
and,
out of
and
this.
Don't be like the guy who smoked his dad. That was Keith Richards, wasn't it?
I've heard of people eating ashes as well.
That sounds like cannibalism to me.
But I think it was Keith Richards rolled him up with his tobacco and over a period of months smoked his dad.
That sounds wrong. But Monica, if somebody was searching for probate, what would you advise them to do?
Searching for probate.
Well, searching for a will.
If they've got a will.
I don't know. So I've said the system that could have been but isn't. What would you say to somebody? They ring up Hutchinson Legal and they say, I can't find my will. We don't have it. What would you say to do?
Is there not a search registry at the Supreme Court?
Well, where probate's been granted. Yep. Yeah.
So you have to advertise. When you're going to apply for probate and you've found a will, which you think is the last will, you have to advertise. So you've got a certain period of time where people can see that someone's trying to submit this will, and you've got that period to object and say, I think I've got an earlier will.
So, or a later will, hopefully.
Yeah, more current will.
Let me be the bit of a fly in the ointment here, because once upon a time you used to often see those in the papers, but you don't see them anymore under public notices.
They are still there. They are still there.
I've been seeing them in the public notice for years.
Oh, well,
you can find them online now.
Can you?
You can find them online. I'm quite sure at the Supreme Court website.
So I was going to say, where would he go? Onto the website, would he?
Yeah, go to a thing called Red Crest is a place. But anyway,
just links to it from the Supreme Court.
So you can go and search if somebody's made an application for probate, and if they have, there should be some. Now, there are privacy. You just can't search anyone all the time, but I think, look,
you
that'd be a place
name.
To start.
You should have a name and a date of birth of the person who's passed away.
All right, I've got to take a quick break.
But I think but call around the lawyer of the suburb where they were and check whether, they might, even if they acted for them for a conveyance, they might know who next acted. The more difficult question is this. When you've gone to a lawyer, Fred Nurk, and co, and then he goes out of business.
Yeah.
And it was with Fred Nurk, but you don't know. Ring the Law Institute. The Law Institute will tell you who took over Fred Nurk's practice.
Oh, well,
hopefully they have the deeds. Look, it's not a faultless system, but it's a good start. And if there is no will, then, of course, it's dealt with under the laws of intestacy, and that's for another week.
Oh, that's a hard one. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. You wanted a Britney Spears. We've now got Britney Spears coming up for you.
Yeah.
Scrapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And I'm talking to Hutchison Legal. We have both Grant Hutchison and Monica on the line. You want to talk about the health system, Grant? You're taking on a big subject.
I'm really going to do such a high-level response that you don't have to worry. I'm not going into... But look, with headlines...
You're the lawyer.
Well, I'm just reading out a headline. I'm not saying it's true. Today, in one of the... I think it's in The Age, but... Minister lashes Monash IVF after second bungle, and again on page three, hospital to drop specialty paediatric services. There's all sorts of issues going on. And one of the things that's important in a civilised society is for us to have trust in our institutions. And hospitals have become an institution that we should trust. My sister works in the hospital, and I know that she basically said to me, whether private or public, once you're in, it's harder to get into the public, it's easier private when you've got insurance, but once you're in, they look after you. Now, that's not always the case, and that's what we're hearing about, how they've done things that some of us might be concerned about. But I want to deal with this. If somebody comes up to you, if somebody, one of the hospital staff, come up and say the word sorry, what does that mean?
Means it made a big boo-boo. Grant, just before we go down that track, though, I don't know how you might not want to answer this, but all right, we've got the IVF. Now, they've been in the paper where the wrong person's got the wrong baby. I mean, what do you do? Do you swap them back? I mean, I don't know what you can do.
No, look, you can't joke about this, but I know if you're in America, you'd make a movie and make a million. But what do you do? What would you do, Alan, if you found out that your son, who's a fantastic person, it wasn't your son, he was somebody else's son, and you'd been given somebody else's son as your son, but you've loved him for the last 35 years. Are you going to ask for a refund or a, you know, what are you going to do?
I don't know. It's. And that's why I'm posing the question to you. I don't know. I don't know what you'd do.
To give you an idea for your next song, sometimes you can't be with the one you love, but love the one you're with.
Grant, supposing, and I don't want to waste a lot of time on this because we've got other things we want to talk about, but supposing, you and I discussed a case like this a few years ago where a guy rang up and he reckoned he'd been given the wrong family and he'd come up in a fairly poor family and he reckoned he should have been in this other family that had plenty of money. I mean, the compensation there to him would be in the multi-millions. Now, I'm not going to laugh about this because I know a bit more about this now than when we actually spoke about it, but, I mean... How do you compensate for someone who's been in a lesser lifestyle than what they should have been, if it's proven?
Look, but how do you value life? And is it basically, you know, we all know the classic examples where you're as rich as Rockefeller and yet you're as miserable as King Miser or King, the king who touched everything and turned to gold. It doesn't... How do you properly compensate for that? I think it takes at least the wisdom of Solomon to work it out.
Yep.
And I'm not saying our current judges don't quite have it, but I don't think every judge is as wise as Solomon. And I think...
I'm not touching judges.
judges are humans too, but they're the ones left to decide this, and it's incredibly, incredibly hard. How do you get it right?
Mm.
How do you value the intrinsic and not just the... Because can you have as much fun driving an old beaten-up ute as you can the latest Jaguar or, Porsche or... What's the faster car than a Porsche?
Ferrari.
Lamborghini?
No, something starting with M that's really...
Maserati.
Yeah, you've got one of those.
Yeah, well, no, I've got a garage full of them. haven't I got a couple?
Matchbox size.
The garage is full, but that's because I borrowed them from you, Alan.
Oh, no, you didn't. All right, so let's get back to that. So all right, just briefly, because I don't want to waste time on this.
Yeah.
What obligation then, if if that's happened, does the IVF provider, I mean, where do they stand if they happen to have done the wrong thing?
Can I say I'm going to be attending a seminar with or a networking event, what is it, in later, with a lot of different health organisations, Northern Health, Western right. Health, Monash, and all sorts of things. And I'm sure there'll be some questions asked. But can I just say, it's a great question. There's a guy, Alan, here. I think you've met Alan. He's come to the radio before.
Yep.
And he's a great guy. He would know, because there'd be that it's like a personal injury. You've missed out on something, and how yep. are you compensated? It's something that's worth looking into. But I want to deal with this question.
So yeah, go. I derailed us.
No, that's okay. The hospital rings you up and says, we just want to say we're sorry. Does that mean you've got an automatic right to damages?
Yep.
And the answer is no.
Don't you? I thought you would.
Yeah, no, remember in the old days, you'd hop out of the car and the insurance company would say, never say sorry.
Even yeah, that's true.
Because you'd void your policy because you've effectively given up and they have nowhere to move.
But isn't that still the same? Isn't that...
Go on.
No, isn't that still the same, though?
No. If you come out and say, sorry that I was such a lousy driver that I cut in front of you and caused the accident, yeah, you're done like a, you know, you're done like a dinner.
Yep.
But if you just say sorry, they've passed legislation, the Victorian government passed legislation to say, virtually, sorry don't mean sorry. Sorry can be... No. They don't. It's not. That's not how the legislation is drafted.
It's not a fault.
It's not a fitting fault. So effectively, what they found is that in the hospital system, and it was somewhat driven by the hospital system already, but various places, it helps diffuse the situation and lets everybody move on when somebody can say, hey, I'm sorry that this has happened. Not that I'm sorry that we're responsible for what happened. If they do that, they're liable. If they just say, the word sorry can have a healing impact.
Yeah.
So what they said is, we don't want to stop people relating like humans because of insurance issues. And so you can say, but it's got to be carefully placed. And this is not legal advice. Before you go out saying sorry, get some specific legal advice so you're not admitting liability. But the gentle word if you hear it in hospital, it's probably by a person who's trained to say sorry without admitting liability.
All right.
It allows people just to feel heard. We've heard you, and it's not, you don't put up excuses, you can say sorry.
All right.
Now, does that make sense? So just
don't it does. Think you've makes sense now.
And I think it's, look, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. Anything that allows healing and does money heal you? Does money fix things? And all I'd say is it's the best thing we've got. That's all we've got to try and fix things. So it's better than nothing. But we act for a lot of victims of crime. And once upon a time, we used to get applications to go to Disneyland because I've been a victim of crime, so the best way to fix it is to go to Disneyland and take the whole family. What we found, look, if you're about to die and it's the Starlight Foundation, and you know, that makes sense.
Yep.
But if you need to deal with the rest of your life, going on an unreal or it's something divorced from reality, one day you come back and you've got to deal with life as it is.
Mm.
And what they so these days... When was the last time you heard about somebody getting a trip to Disneyland as a victim of crime?
Maybe not Disneyland, but holidays, yeah, not long ago.
There you go.
Shot down, he flies.
I haven't heard the Disneyland one, but I've heard of holidays, you know, yeah. Fiji and so on.
Fiji. So, okay, but does it fix you?
No, but probably makes them feel happy. So they've got something out of it. It
feels you happy while you're there.
Yep.
That's a heal.
If there's an injury that needs fixing, that's one thing. But if it's just I need to fix relationships with people and I need to be able to one of the things that I had a parent telling me recently was my child has this injury, but they're not doing the basic exercises that are necessary in order to heal.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a perpetual motion of – and. What you need is somebody to encourage, to get alongside, to help them, to do the exercise, to improve the muscles and get back their life rather than saying, oh, well, the longer you're off means the bigger the payout. Does that make sense?
Yep. I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Thanks, sir.
In the backyard, got my first guitar at 10. Learned how to saddle up a horse, gallop far and back again. I'm playing country, living and breathing and dreaming and playing country. I'm playing country, walking and talking and cussing and playing country. On the oval, kissed my first girlfriend goodbye. Smoked my first stick of tobacco, learned how to knot and tie. I'm playing country, living and breathing and dreaming and playing country. I'm playing country, walking and talking and cussing and playing country. Country for the city, got a job that paid the rent, but my heart was never in it. Lay awake all night in bed. I'm playing country, living and breathing and dreaming and playing country. I'm playing country, walking and talking and cussing and playing country. Got the guitar on my back. Found that girl that I first kissed, and together we made a pact.
We're playing country, living and breathing and dreaming and playing country. We're all playing country, walking and talking and kissing and playing country. We're playing country, living and breathing and dreaming and playing country. We're all playing country, walking and talking and cussing and playing country. Living and breathing and dreaming and playing country. Walking and talking and cussing and playing country.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, and we're talking to Grant and Monica from Hutchison Legal. We hear from them the second Wednesday of every month between 1 and 2, and it's great to have them along. Now, Monica, I see the great man's left the building.
He did just step out for a moment, yes.
He didn't want to hear the next segment.
Yes.
All right, Monica, so let's talk to you. You're his PA.
I'm going to talk to you from the perspective of a personal assistant in an office, not as a lawyer.
And how long have you been with Hutchison Legal?
With Hutchison Legal in particular, I started it in the end of 2021, so I think I'm coming up to 4 years now.
Yep.
But I started in legal back in 2004 when I was a wee lass.
Yep.
I started off, I think I was doing, during my school training, I did a legal subject and I thought it was very interesting. But I wasn't the academic type. I didn't want to go through university, or the way my life went, I wasn't going to be going to university.
Yep.
So I went down the avenue of, getting into legal as from the other perspective, as admin support and administration and PA,
yep.
Personal assistant. So, and I feel very fulfilled. I think I still get the enjoyment of helping, you know, the office, other staff members, the lawyers, to get our clients what they need, the outcome they want, the need and the help they need, without the responsibilities as a lawyer has, trying to meet budgets and all that. I can put my books down and leave at 5 o'clock.
So does Grant.
she's very disciplined. Even when I say, look, you work so hard, why don't you go home early, which is rare. But when
I bet you don't.
And what do you say to me? You say, no, I want to stay until...
I've still got things to do.
She's got a wonderful work ethic.
So I enjoy my role in that I get to assist clients and, you know, get information required that the lawyer who's working with them needs effectively. Try and save costs. If I can help where I can in getting information and responding to emails where I can... without giving any legal advice, of course.
Yep.
It's very fulfilling.
Well, that's good. What made you decide that you liked law? Or was it just something inside you?
It was, I was actually doing hospitality management course in my VCE. It was like VCE vet subject.
Yep.
And one of the classes we did, one of the topics we had to cover was legal. And I thought this was really interesting. And then I researched some options of what kind of courses I could do, and I found a legal administration short course. And then I actually did a traineeship with a law firm in Armidale.
Oh, right.
Which I don't think that's not very common.
No, it's fair enough, too.
That was Burke and Associates in Armidale.
Now, listen, Grant, you keep on bringing in coffees for Monica and yourself. You never offer me one.
Only for me. Monica.
I only drink water.
I've got water here.
There you go.
Look, Grant, I want to take a quick break, and then when we no, we won't. We'll wait another couple of minutes. I want to give you next the question for next month, if I can.
Here it is. I've got a pen and paper.
And then we'll come back. Righto. Now, we want to talk about juries. Now, there's a high-profile case going on at the moment, which we're not going to touch, but it's brought out some questions, and none of these are talking about that actual case itself. Who gets to decide where a court case is? Because there's one that's been moved down to another spot. Is it the judge? Is it the defendant? Is it the prosecutor or defence? I mean, who gets to decide where it's going to be held?
Yeah.
The next thing is, when you swear, you have your jury pool, and, you know, you might get 30 and then you go in and they challenge and they get down to 12. Why don't they have more than 12? Because 12 have to sit. But then if one takes sick, then sometimes they've had to discharge the whole jury. Why can't there be one or two not necessarily sitting in the jury box but listening to the case as a spare? Yeah. Then why, with some of these juries, does it have to be a unanimous decision? And some of them, the judge will accept the, I can't think of the word, but the majority vote. So there's a few things in there about a jury.
And remember, and I'm not going to answer, but just remember there's a difference between juries in a civil case and juries in a criminal case.
Well, can you tell us?
When we think of it in terms of civil, in criminal, we always think of the person up on a murder charge, like, oh, sorry, just...
Yep.
I think somebody's heard me on radio and decided to call me. I'll tell you what. The fame of being in your presence.
No, it's more likely wifey saying, hey, don't forget to bring the milk home tonight. Anyway, so could you have a look at the difference in the juries between...
Yeah, we will. We'll get back to you on that.
Because we've had two or three questions over a period of time about juries. We've never particularly sort of talked about them, but particularly this case where it was moved, and my understanding is, and I could be wrong, if the case... Because often they're in Shepparton. I've heard of cases being heard in Shepparton and that, but who decides where they're going to get there and why?
Well, and I remember appearing in a case where it was in Warrnambool.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court sitting in Warrnambool.
Oh, you'd have taken the fishing rod down and had a weekend and charged them for it.
I actually took my great aunt for a ride. She hadn't been to Warrnambool for many years. And while I was in court, she visited the park and had a good time, and I took her back afterwards. It was good to have company.
It's a good spot, Warrnambool. All right, I'm going to take a quick break now, and we'll be back with more. And what are we going to talk about then, Grant?
I think whatever you want, Alan. It's presenter's choice.
Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Now, Grant, there's often complaints when a person's, particularly if they're on trial for some sort of crime, that the cross-examiner tries to rip them to pieces, and people get a bit annoyed. Why can't it be a decent conversation between two people? Why does the person doing the cross examination have to try and tear them to pieces?
Look, why shouldn't it be just like a conversation between neighbours over the fence?
Yep.
And we just have a chat, because there are what's called rules of evidence. Because why should you be allowed to say, "Oh, hey Jack, I heard the other day that Jim told Betty," and she'd heard from Avis,
yep,
that this happened,
mm,
because it's not reliable. That'd be triple hearsay. They heard somebody say, yep, they heard, and so that's not allowed in. And exceptions to the hearsay rule. So hearsay is, why should that be allowed as evidence? You need to go to the original source. Does that make sense? Why would you want that?
Yeah, but I can understand that, but even so, they still, the complaint is that the person that's doing the cross-examination often gets very, very hard and dragging out stuff that maybe should, well, they think they should drag it out. Well, they're there to discredit the person giving evidence.
Can I say that I did some training on advocacy many, many years ago when I was, I think, working for a city law firm. And there I spoke to what I'd consider one of the best cross-examiners.
All right.
And he was teaching others how to be good cross-examiners. And I just went up to him during the break and I said, I won't say his name, but I said, you must feel bad that you break people in the witness box. And he said, Grant, it's only occurred once where I've a truly honest person I broke in the witness box. He said, if people stick to the truth, and he still feels bad about that case. Yep. It was an old lady, and yes, he believed she was a totally honest witness, but he cracked her and made a mess of her. And he feels guilty. But and he just said to me, Grant, it's incredibly unusual to break an honest witness. It's incredibly, and he said, when somebody sticks to the truth, it's almost impossible to break them. But he said, when an honest person deviates just a little bit into lies, just deviates a little bit into not telling the full truth, just a little bit, he said, they're mine and I can rip them apart. So if you tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, incredibly, as he said, as a master cross-examiner, a barrister, he wasn't able to do it except once in his whole career, and he feels bad about it. But the rest of the time, honest people get through. But when they choose to deviate from the truth, he just said, I've got them. So they might tell 90% of the truth and 10% something else, and he said he can totally, he can wipe the floor with them.
I mean, you often do see where in their evidence that they trip up and say, oh, no, look, and they've changed their mind, haven't they? I mean, and well, that's happened in a case just recently.
Well, often if you say, you said one thing in a statement and something else later, that's an inconsistency and you need to explain it. But it's not fatal to your case. It's not the end of it. But all I'd say is let's do this. And this goes to another point. How do you prepare a witness for court? And I think you're alluding that some people get...
I think some of them get a bit primed, yeah.
Well, primed, you're not allowed to legally coach a witness. You're not allowed to.
Aren't you?
You're not allowed to... No, you're not allowed to coach. But you are allowed to prepare them.
And that's the difference. No. All right, come on, let's not be semantic. What's the difference between those two?
In a civil case, which is where... you've got to prove it on the balance of probabilities that your case is better than the other case. And as soon as you can do that, you win. Yep. But if it's 50-50, you lose. But in a civil case, a person, before they go to court, should be made aware of and understand what's called the pleadings. In other words, the writ, the defence, the reply, the interrogatories, all of these things they should be aware of. Because they should be allowed to see what the court knows already. It's in written form. So they should be prepared in that sense. But saying, hey, look, we're telling you if he asks this question, you give this answer, that is wrong and shouldn't be allowed. And if anyone's doing that,
A lawyer says to you now, when they ask you this question, pour the tears on because you'll start to win the jury over. Is that legal?
That sounds to me like coaching.
I'm asking.
Yeah, well,
because it's a thin line though, isn't it?
Remember the case, remember the movie, I think it was Dustin Hoffman, and he was helping a woman with a divorce or helping somebody with a divorce, and he said, if I snap my pencil, and it was a signal, but you're losing them. And when, I think it was Dustin Hoffman, it was a divorce case, Kramer versus Kramer or something, but I think and I should know less about movies than this, but he effectively broke it because putting on the tears lost the jury, didn't win the jury.
Right.
We think putting on the tears wins the jury. It doesn't.
Doesn't it?
No, it doesn't always. All I'd say is tears can – what the jury wants is they want the facts, the truth, and they want to go home.
Yep.
They want to win. And they don't want 6 days of – whatever. They don't want theatre, and you've only got to lose one or two of the jury, you've lost the case.
Mm.
But, of course, in a civil case, it might be different. In a criminal case, Now, please, I'm not making any comment about current cases.
No.
In criminal, you'd want to be aware of what the charge is. What are the police charging you with? What are the necessary elements for them to prove? This is normally set out in the charge sheet. But also, what's the legal definition of certain? So it's not coaching, but it's proper understanding and appreciation of the legal documents that... I'll stop it.
That sounds like political talk to me. But I understand what you're saying. No, I really do.
Well, I suppose the in cross-examination, getting back to that, Neil McPhee QC or Queen's Counsel, then he's died, but there's the McPhee Centre, and he said, Grant, here's some notes that you can use when you're talking to witnesses. Mm. And I said, Neil, but what happens if a judge has a go at me about these notes? He said, just tell them I prepared them.
And that was kind of weird.
And what it is some great notes about basically saying when you're being cross-examined, beware the conversationalist. In other words, beware the person who rolls three or four questions into one, and you say, so beware of this. Try to answer as succinctly as possible. Try to keep to the, and sometimes maybe even say, can you repeat that question? I didn't quite understand that. Or you seem to have a few questions in one. So don't just beware the person who's really nice to you, because they're normally not nice because you're giving the answers to the other side.
Right. Because wasn't it a case where they used to call it a verbaling or something with the police, and they outlawed that, where they couldn't ask five or six questions to try and mess you up? Am I right?
Verbaling might mean something else. I think that's deliberately confusing. I think there's... look, Judge, the system is designed to ensure a fair trial. After years and years of experience about a fair trial, but Monica's here. What would you think if you were a witness giving evidence? If you went in unprepared, how would you go? Just tell me what's your observation? Don't mention any particular cases, but what would you say to somebody if they said, I'm in court tomorrow, what should I do to prepare?
Oh, gee. Review what you went through or whatever you're witnessing.
Yeah.
And then just answer each question as they come and without too much detail. Wouldn't go into too much detail.
Well, that's a lay approach. So, but can I say, we've got these booklets, and if anyone wants one, it's a notebook. I think I've given you one. Notes for My Lawyer.
Yep.
And it's covering that. It's a booklet. It's something which should be protected by legal professional privilege. Notes solely prepared for the purpose of getting legal advice or preparation for a trial, working with it, that should be protected. So we've made these booklets. If anybody wants one, all they've got to do is ring the office or come in and ask one is probably better. We don't want to be
incurring the postage. Yep.
We'll even give them two if they come in. But if they want to tell us otherwise, so we're at 38 New Street, and come on in, pick up one of these, and it's just a free gift from us to say, you don't have to use us as your lawyer, you can use, but it does have our similar logo on it, but you can use any lawyer, and it's really notes for my lawyer, as long as the sole purpose. If you start putting a shopping list in there, that won't be covered. But it's really something you should have but not use.
Write the location of your will.
Yeah, that's a good way to round it out.
I just want to go back to Monica. Monica, you were saying that you would tell people to, rock up and tell the truth and all that jazz. Can you tell them, and would you tell them, now don't go dressed on for this case with a suit and tie because you look too professional? Are you allowed to say to them, look, this should be casual, or I think on this case you really should go in with a suit and tie and look as if you know what you're talking about? Would that impress somebody on the jury or depress them?
I think you should just go as yourself and how you would feel comfortable. If you're more comfortable, you're more likely to be comfortable in court and be able to speak and not get, wrapped up in nerves and so on. So I would just suggest that someone goes in what they feel comfortable.
Yeah, because the other point is that the prosecutor, the judge and all the people on that side and the defence attorney, they're all very comfortable in the courts because that's where they work all day, every day, aren't they? Whereas you're going in maybe once in your life.
When I say comfortable, I also that doesn't mean go in your moccasins and so on.
No. Well, it might depend on which court you're appearing in. Yeah. Some of them might go well.
Could I finish off, and I don't mean to cut across Monica because far more wisdom comes from places, but I'd just say going into court is like going into a foreign country. Yep. They talk differently. They have different customs and rules.
Yep.
So it's always good to go and visit a court before you appear as a witness or appear as a plaintiff or defendant. Just sit down and have a look. Start to understand. Show the respect that you would in any culture that is to travel around the world. Observe, listen, try to get into the groove of what's going on. But don't be argumentative. All you'll do is put everybody offside.
Yeah.
So, look, it's one of those things. It is like they're talking a different language and just
they dress in a different way, so dress appropriately.
But I would say dress to impress. Don't dress down. But you're right, if you've never worn a suit in your life and it's just not you, you don't want – there's jokes about people who turn up in suits and –
Well, could be the prosecutor and the defence attorney as well.
The prosecution is normally in a uniform.
Are they?
But look, I think there are. You want to take the time to get ready and be prepared, not coached. Be prepared, not coached. See it as like an exam.
Right.
And if you're prepared, you can actually. You won't. Look forward to it, but when you're in the middle of it, you can actually enjoy it.
Yeah, you're not going to panic.
Are the ones that go in, what do I do? So if you're properly prepared, and there's a few steps, again, notes or rules on giving evidence that were Neil McPhee put together. As long as you're not a lawyer from another law firm, we're happy to give it. We could email that to you when we find it, but just send it to monica@hutchinsonlegal.com.au and Hutchinson has an in the middle. We're not the ones without
Hutchinson.
You live in the chin, you
got to go, guys. The news. Thank you very much again, and we look forward to talking to someone from Hutchinson Legal same time next month.
See you.
Bye. See you later. Bye.